It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and Illinois has another official state symbol. This one is a bee, Bombus oricomus, better known as the black and gold bumblebee. As with many state symbols, this came about thanks to a year of campaigning by 8th graders at Lincoln Junior High in Naperville. The class did research on Illinois native bee species and learned about their usefulness. They distributed presentations across the state, held a statewide vote, and even testified before lawmakers. Their efforts resulted in House Bill 4438 becoming law. With that in mind, for the rest of the hour today, we're going to learn more about the black and gold bumblebee and use the opportunity to get a sort of sense of how pollinators are doing in general across Illinois. Joining us now to talk more about this is Elena Groton, lab manager of the Dolezal Bee Research Lab at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Elena, welcome to the 21st show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can join us. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, so let's start by talking about this black and gold bumblebee. For those who are unfamiliar with it, what does it look like?
It's a pretty big bee, probably one of the bigger bumblebees or biggest bumblebees you'll see in Illinois. I'd say it's probably the size of my thumb, so maybe an inch and a half to two inches long. It's very wide. It's got big dark wings, and it's super fuzzy. Some bees have a little bit less fuzz on them. And it's got, exactly as the name suggests, big black and gold stripes on its rear, on its abdomen. And they're pretty beautiful, big bumblebees.
Yeah, I was doing some research, and like people out in some states are like, whoa, we saw one in the last decade. How common is it for some? I mean, would most Illinoisans have seen one of these things potentially in their backyard or a park or something like that?
Potentially, yeah. I'd say that they're a little hard to tell in Illinois. We have another species called the American bumblebee, or Bombus pennsylvanicus, that looks very similar. And so it's sometimes difficult even for researchers just on the fly to tell, you know, are we seeing the black and gold bumblebee, or are we seeing the American bumblebee? But you do find them semi-frequently, probably in nicer sort of habitat areas, I'd say, if you're hiking somewhere where there's a prairie. I think you'd be more likely to see one there.
Prairies, grasslands. How big is their extent then across the country? I think it was Vermont where people were excited to have seen one in a decade.
Yeah. I think they do have a bit of a range. I've seen one as far south as North Carolina, and then they can be up in Vermont. They're definitely much more of a cold weather bumblebee, so they're bigger. They tend to do better farther north, so they're a bit more common in like Wisconsin and Minnesota. So I think that they're just, I don't know that they've declined in those other areas as much as they just aren't as common in general.
So have you worked with them before, and what are they like?
I've not worked with them sort of specifically. I've worked with a lot of bumblebees altogether. Bombus oricomus, I think, my most sort of memorable run-in with them was I was working in a prairie restoration, and there was a nest that was under one of these big bunch grasses that's native in sort of Midwestern prairies. And there was a male oricomus that was perched on a single blade of grass above this nest. And every time a female bee would fly out, he'd try to fly and mate with her. And this is a behavior that I don't think I've heard of other bumblebee species doing, but it's this perching and sort of hunting behavior that the males in the black and gold bumblebees do. And it was pretty funny to watch.
Insert your jokes about Campus Town right now.
Yeah.
What is their behavior like compared with, like, you know, the bees that people might be more familiar with from, you know, their backyards, for example?
They're pretty docile. I mean, bumblebees in general are pretty uninterested in people. They probably will fly away if you try to get too close to them. Yeah, most bees, unless you're threatening their nest or sort of trying to physically grab them, don't really care a lot about people. And they're just doing their pollination and trying to find food. And the behavior of the males is probably the most unique behavior that I've heard about the black and gold bumblebee specifically.
Interesting. Well, then let's talk a little bit more about the life of the male and the female BGB, mm-hmm. right? How are they different? What is their sort of life cycle?
Yeah, so bumblebees in general, and black and gold bumblebee is no different, follow a bit of a different cycle than I'd say most people are familiar with. Honeybees, for example, have what we call like perennial colonies. So the same queen lives for, like, say, up to 5 years, and the same hive, survives as a hive over the winter. Whereas with bumblebees, the nests live more annually. So they only live for about a year. And what happens is in the spring, a queen comes out of the ground where she's been overwintering. She buried herself for the winter. And she comes out, she's already mated, and she has to go find and make a nest. So she'll go try to dig herself a hole, find an old rodent burrow, or sometimes they'll find old like crevices in trees, or like dig into soft wood, something like that. She'll make herself a little house, and she'll go out, just the queen, and she'll start trying to collect pollen, collect nectar to feed herself, and she'll start laying eggs and rearing her first generation of workers.
Let's pause there, because we need to take a break on the program, and I think that's a good pause point. We'll continue. We're talking about the black and gold bumblebee, which is now the official Illinois state bee. This is something that the school children help make happen here. We're talking about this with Elena Groton, who's lab manager of the Dolezal Bee Research Lab at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. If you want to join us, we'd love to hear about your experience with bees. Maybe you've seen one of these. They're relatively rare out in the world. 800-222-9455 is the number. We'll continue this conversation after a short break. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking with Elena Groton, who is lab manager of the Dolezal Bee Research Lab at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And we're talking about the state of bees in Illinois, specifically the new official state bee, the black and gold bumblebee, that followed a year-long effort from eighth graders at Lincoln Junior High in Naperville. You can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Elena, before the break, we were talking about the life cycle of the black and gold bumblebee, and I believe you were on the part where the queen sort of lays eggs and sort of kicks off the next generation.
Yeah, so she lays her first generation of workers. These workers are usually pretty small because the queen is a one-woman show at this point and taking care of all the young herself. But this first generation of workers will then help the queen raise the next generation of workers. They'll go out and collect pollen. And after this point, this queen doesn't really leave the nest a whole lot more, if at all. So this goes on, and depending on the species of bumblebee, there'll be a few generations. For some of the more common species of bumblebees, like the common eastern bumblebee, which you'll see around here a lot, they're colonies can be pretty big, 100 to several hundred workers. Species like Orichomis, I think their colonies are a bit smaller, probably less than 100 workers over the course of the whole summer. And so as time goes on, the queen will start laying her next generation of queens. We often call these gynes or gynes. And these are the unmated queens. So these unmated queens will leave the nest. They'll start essentially fattening themselves up for winter. After this point, the queen will start laying her males. And the males then will also leave the nest and go try to find a gyne to mate with. Once the gynes have mated, they will, again, keep trying to eat as much as they can before winter. And then they will find a little spot to bury themselves in the ground while they wait for winter to pass, and then they'll come out in the spring and the whole cycle starts all over again.
I'm so fascinated by this idea. It really is like a hereditary monarchy, right? I guess.
Yeah, yes.
Maybe that's why we choose those terms to apply to this, to anthropomorphize these animals. But talk about that. How does one creature produce, sort of on demand, sometimes they're workers, sometimes they're queens. I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, it's in bumblebees, we were I'm pretty sure it's hormonal. I am not super familiar with like the details of the physiology, but there's sort of two separate things that are going on. One is that bumblebees, like many, many bee species, are what we called haplodiploids. So the females have both sets of chromosomes from the parents, whereas the males only have half. And so the males are the unmated or unfertilized eggs from the queen. And so the queen has some sort of internal way of saying, okay, now I'm going to lay the fertilized eggs or versus lay the unfertilized eggs. This is the same in honeybees as well. Additionally, because of this, the workers who don't mate can also lay males, which sometimes is very interesting. And then the queen, once she decides to stop laying workers and start laying gynes, is in bumblebees is more of a hormonal shift because of how the workers take care of the queens. In honeybees, it's a little bit different, and the workers kind of decide which young are queens and which young are not.
Interesting. So, all right. So we've been talking about the black and gold bumblebee, but let's broaden our lens a little bit to talk about all bees across Illinois. So what are some of the other species you can find here?
There's a lot of species. There's 400 to 500 native species of bees in Illinois. So we've got about 11 species of bumblebee, our black and gold bumblebee, of course. There's the rusty patch bumblebee, which is the federally endangered bee you can find sort of farther north in Illinois, closer to the Chicago-Rockford area, you'll find them. But we've also got a lot of really tiny bees. Another bee that I believe was up for potentially being the state bee was the bicolored sweat bee, which is sort of like a medium-sized solitary bee. It's got a bright, like iridescent green body and then a black and white striped abdomen, so back end. And they're pretty small. I'd say they're maybe, you know, half an inch long at most. So there's quite a variety in Illinois.
I guess that's a testament to the superior lobby of the bumblebee over the sweat bees. So how are bees, you know, with that in mind, in a general way, how are bees in Illinois doing?
Well, that kind of depends. There's a lot of data that we're missing, unfortunately. Illinois is a big state, and there's a lot of agriculture and private land. So we have some gaps in terms of data that we just don't have. Last year, 2024 to 2025, there were some big honeybee losses, you know, across the country, but Illinois was not excluded from that. Our own hives at the university that we use for research, we had, I think, you know, 60 or 70% hive loss or colony losses. And that was seen pretty broadly. But that's specific to honeybees, which are not native, and they're mostly for agricultural purposes. In terms of our native bees, rusty patch is doing a little bit better, but it seems that it's still pretty limited in its areas that it can be found. And for the smaller bees, we just are lacking a lot of data.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. We have Nancy calling from Northern Illinois. Nancy, thanks for calling in.
Hi, Brian, and hi. I don't know your name.
Elena, but thank you. So I understand you support Protect the Honeybees?
Yes, I do. It's a wonderful organization, and I'm in Northern Illinois, of course. I've been on your show before. I love the honeybees, and there were five in my backyard today. Just so you know, I'm in McChesney Park. It's a little suburb outside of Rockford. And there were five of them out there, and they were, well, unfortunately, I have cats. I'm an animal lover, and I have quite a few cats, and one accidentally killed a little baby mouse. It was out in the backyard, and, of course, the honeybees got on top of the poor little mouse. But I do support the bees so much, and I thank you for listening.
All right, Nancy, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Elena, anything you want to say there?
That's great. I love that people are watching bees in their backyard.
All right. So, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the idea of colony collapse. That's something we've heard a lot about. I'm sure that's, you know, something that an organization like Protect the Honeybees or that sort of movement is motivated by. Talk more about that, because I think it's, you know, it's one of those phrases we hear a lot, but maybe we don't understand as much about the mechanisms or, you know, we hear a lot about the consequences. But like what you mentioned at the U of I, some research colonies or hives. What happened?
Yeah, so that isn't what we would probably call like traditional colony collapse. Colony collapse disorder was something that seemed to be happening a lot, probably about 15, 20 years ago, to a lot of honeybee hives. And that has tapered off significantly. I think most people do not report sort of those symptoms. What we saw and what people were seeing pretty broadly last year was an issue with, there's a very common pest for honeybees called varroa mites. And varroa mites have been around for a while now, and they're very, very good at transmitting diseases to honeybees. They're kind of like a tick would be on us, except if that tick was the size of like a dinner plate. That's how big they are relative to the size of a honeybee's body.
And I'm going to have nightmares.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty dramatic if you think about it that way. But they're very good at transmitting diseases. And we have methods for managing them in terms of like treating hives with pesticides that are safe for the bees but bad for the mites. And it seems that maybe some of those mites are becoming resistant to those pesticides and thus transmitting more diseases. And so there was pretty bad losses over the winter last year. So I think that's currently the bigger concern, is this pesticide resistance in the varroa mites.
How worried should we be about honeybees? You know, there's so many things to worry about in this world, from, you know, nuclear proliferation to pandemics, and take your pick. How worried should we be about honeybees, and, you know, as compared to in the past as well?
Personally, I'm not super concerned about honeybees. That might be controversial for some people, but honeybees at the end of the day are more of an agricultural commodity. They're very important to agriculture, do not get me wrong. They're very valuable, but we have a lot of means to build up those populations commercially for ourselves. I'm personally much more concerned about native bees, where we don't have those means of building up the populations. And they face a lot of threats that we just know less about because we're not handling them all the time, and they're not an agricultural commodity in the same way that honeybees are. And so honeybees, I think are okay for now. I'm much less concerned about them than they are about other native bees that we know less about.
And what are some of the consequences potentially if these other native bee species, have some of the problems that we've been talking about?
Yeah, I mean, but besides just loss of our beautiful biodiversity, a lot of our native plants in our prairies have evolved for, you know, thousands of years with these bee species. And we would be seeing significantly, you know, reduced pollination of those plants, which could change what some of our landscapes look like. While honeybees are great at pollinating for agriculture, a lot of native bees are actually better at pollinating certain crops, things like apples or blueberries. Fewer native bees do an equally good job as, you know, a large quantity of honeybees that you have to bring in and then manage. And so the cost of bringing in managed honeybees to pollinate these crops will go up if we lose a lot of native bees. I think that those are some of the risks we run if we lose native bees as opposed to honeybees.
Just a couple of minutes left in our time together. Can you talk about what you think, you know, we should be doing to help support these, you know, not the honeybees, but these other sort of bee species, both, you know, systemically as a people and then as individuals, maybe?
Well, I think systemically there's a lot of research that people are trying to do, and so supporting that research where you can. There's a lot of great organizations that support research and support, you know, conservation efforts. We've our group has worked with groups like Grand Prairie Friends, and they've been extremely helpful in giving us places to do research. But also they restore and maintain really beautiful prairies and different native Illinois landscapes. Individually, I think planting flowers is always a really wonderful and fun way to start. It's somewhat accessible if you have even just a little patio or deck outside of an apartment. Some native flowers in a pot are a great place to start. If you have a yard, starting with some native flowers, there's a lot of nurseries or local gardeners who are happy to talk to you all about what it will grow or won't grow. And I think a lot of our native flowers are really beautiful and make really nice plants in a garden.
So bottom line, we're coming to the end of our time together. Do you think bees are doing better than they have in recent years? Where is the trend line heading?
I think that the trend line is getting worse, generally, as far as we can tell. But it's a little hard to tell what that means or how much worse it is. There's just a lot of missing information, and we know it's not great, but we're not sure what that looks like.
Elena Grattan is lab manager at the Dolezal Bee Research Lab at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thanks so much for being with us and sharing your work with us today here on the 21st Show.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
That is all the time we have for today's show. Coming up tomorrow, Illinois recently launched a state Department of Early Childhood. We'll talk with its secretary about what it does and how it's navigating ongoing shortages in staffing and availability for childcare across the 21st state. Also, the Canadian wildfires that recently darkened Illinois skies continue to burn. We'll talk about how we felt that here in Illinois and what might be in store for that kind of weather in the future, both the rest of this summer and long term. I should also say we're scheduled to tape a conversation Wednesday afternoon with Don Tracy, the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate in this fall's Illinois elections. If you have questions for him, you can email us. talk@21stshow.org is the address, or even better, leave your questions on our voicemail line. We might share it during our interview. The number for that is 217-300-2121. Again, questions for Republican Senate nominee Don Tracy, 217-300-2121. We're taping that Wednesday afternoon. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.